He is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know, it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles. And to be even remotely respected as an NFL owner, Jimmy Haslam will have to do more than float these absurd trial balloons that satisfy political factions in this country. To leak the hollow concept of Condoleezza Rice interviewing for the Cleveland Browns head coaching position is an absolute insult to anybody who ever worked hard to ascend in that profession, only to be undercut by a publicity stunt. Now, does Rice check boxes amid America's social sea changes? Sure she does. Female, African-American, high intellect, former Secretary of State, and she does know football as a Browns and Stanford fan and as the daughter of an Alabama high school coach and athletic director.
My love of football started with my father. Daddy was a high school football coach who loved the game. He had wanted me to be his All-American linebacker, and had I been a son instead of a daughter, I think I might have done it.
But come on, Haslam was floating this only as an attempt to make himself look woke while shrouding the bigger reality. His recent ownership of the Browns has been a bigger farce than the franchise itself. And I am happy to report that Rice, who attends some Browns games and was seen with Haslam and his wife last month in Oakland, handled this debacle with dignity, posting on Facebook, people still use Facebook, that she's, quote, not ready to coach, unquote, but that she would be glad to call a play or two next year. Why the hell not? Look, I am a champion of the advancement of women and minorities and out-of-the-box thinking, and Rice does know the game, having once told a USA Today writer that she would try to demoralize opponents by running the ball if she did run a football team. But stunts such as this only mock the process of fairness in the working space, and Rice has no experience whatsoever as a football coach and is no more qualified than those barking fools in the dog pound in Cleveland. Worthy female candidates are ascending in pro sports. Becky Hammon, assistant coach with the Spurs. Sue Bird in a front office post with the Denver Nuggets. Various women serving on NFL coaching staffs, such as 49ers assistant Katie Sowers, the second woman to become a full-time NFL assistant, and the only openly gay coach in the league. If Rice is interested, yeah, employ her as an executive or a consultant with the Browns. But let's not dilute progress with folly. Haslam left it to his general manager, John Dorsey, to say that Rice's potential coaching candidacy has not been discussed. I have a better idea, Jimmy. Would you just sell the team because you are not equipped for the responsibility? And with the Rams-Chiefs Monday night collision serving as an act of humanity, an attempt to unify and soothe a devastated California after the deadly wildfires and the mass shootings, we are reminded of football's dangers by the grotesque cover-your-eyes fracture of Alex Smith's right leg. As Joe Theismann actually tweeted while in attendance at FedEx Field, that is creepy, Smith's horrible injury occurred 33 years to the day when Theismann broke the same two bones in his lower right leg, the fibula and the tibia. Theismann never played again, and it's possible Smith, who is 34, never will play again. If so, it's another burn of bad luck for the former number one pick in the draft, who was playing well when he lost his job to Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, and playing well when he lost his job to Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. and had the Washington Redskins veering toward the NFC East title when this happened. He was sandwiched by Houston's J.J. Watt and Kareem Jackson. Clean hit. Football hit. Here was Redskins coach Jay Gruden, who now will have to use journeyman Colt McCoy at quarterback.
I know it was very painful for him and heartbreaking for a lot of people. You know, he's a great guy and a hard worker and one of the key leaders on his football team. So these things happen in pro football, unfortunately. Just hate to see them happen to a guy like Alex. But knowing the type of guy he is, I think he'll bounce back.
As he was carted off the field, Smith clasped his hands in prayer. As he motioned toward the stands, I think a nation is joining him and praying for him. And anybody who ever again says, why are we protecting quarterbacks, should be forced to travel for a week by wheelchair. Nothing more can be said about Rams, Chiefs than whatever already has been uttered, though I'm going to try anyway. This is the ultimate celebration of the NFL's offense-first passing extravaganza frenzy, and the league, which lucked out when the field was unplayable in Mexico City, will have an all-star officiating crew for this matchup between old fox Andy Reid and his creation Mahomes against young scientist Sean McVay and his student Jared Goff, not to mention all of those weapons. Here's a chance for the NFL, which has enjoyed a season of relative peace and increased TV ratings amid the turbulence of recent years, to display its product in front of what used to be the biggest showcase, a Monday Night Football audience. And while emotional sentiment favors the Rams, whose coaches and players have dealt with their own upheaval and displacement from their homes in the Thousand Oaks area, my football gut says the Chiefs are going to win because the Rams' vulnerable defense will not stall Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Kareem Hunt. And nobody is more vulnerable in this game than the former Chief cornerback Marcus Peters, whose temper could burst into ugliness if he's beaten too often. It's going to take a massive effort by the Rams defensive monster Aaron Donald to flip the momentum here. I say Chiefs win 45-30. I have not changed on that. And a Rams loss would mean that the New Orleans Saints will take control of the top NFC seeding after their latest masterpiece, a passing and running thrashing of the dying Super Bowl champ Eagles, while Drew Brees goes head-to-head with Mahomes for league MVP honors. Did you notice how Eagles defensive back Malcolm Jenkins, the former Saint, flipped the bird at his former coach Sean Payton when the Saints went for it on 4th and 6 with the Saints up by 31? So he flips the bird. Jenkins said he and Payton are all good after a post-game chat, and Payton wisely said all the right things. I mean, his team is golden right now.
Malcolm, you know, I think the world of him. He's a tremendous player. And, you know, I hate that he got out of here. You know, that was probably as big a mistake as we've made here in 13 years. And he's made up of all the right things. And he's a tremendous competitor.
You know, I could love me a Saints-Chiefs Super Bowl. Very refreshing. But Rams coach Sean McVay has something to say about that.
I think our players have done a nice job just being able to handle a lot over the last couple weeks. And I think the thing that we've talked about is just being able to prioritize, you know, what's important. Taking care of your families, making sure that all that stuff is good. But then it's been very impressive with their ability when they come back to work, making sure that the other things are taken care of, to refocus, to gather themselves together and get ready to play a football game. They did that last week, and we expect the same this week.
Because of the late decision to move the game, plenty of tickets are available if you're in the area at bargain basement prices. And before you condemn LA as a bad sports town, would your local stadium be filled with this sudden move from Mexico at 5 p.m. on the Monday before Thanksgiving after a double whammy of tragedies in the area? No, your stadium would not be filled either. Plus, your stadium doesn't have 85,000 seats. And just when the Pittsburgh Steelers were ready to admit, why didn't we cede to Le'Veon Bell's wishes? A question that arose Sunday when replacement James Conner dropped a sure, touchdown pass and had another bad drop. Who was there to bail out the cause? Old reliable himself, Ben Roethlisberger, who set aside those four picks in the game to rally the Steelers to two long scoring drives in the final minutes and that stunning comeback win over a woeful Jacksonville team that now will undergo massive internal changes. The Steelers tried to cut a last-minute deal with Bell last week, it turns out, but they said no when Bell demanded they not place a franchise or transition tag on him. And Le'Veon, who now becomes a free agent who may or may not command his desired free agency price as an elite two-way running back, wouldn't be excused for grinning a little as Connor struggled on a day when the Jags really mashed right through the soggy defense of the Steelers most of the game. But after being burned earlier by nemesis Jalen Ramsey, Big Ben exacted revenge on the mouthy cornerback, who referred to Roethlisberger as decent at best, quote-unquote, during Ramsey's offseason PR tour of rants. And it was Ben who dove into the end zone with 3 seconds left, and he quieted the Jaguars' trash talkers.
I don't get mad at myself when I throw interceptions because of the stats or anything like that. I get mad at myself because I feel like I let my guys down. They had a linebacker, number 50. We'll just use numbers so we don't say any names, that wanted to let me know every time I threw an interception. He found me and told me how many interceptions I threw. It's a little motivation, too.
Now, the Jags probably want to trade Ramsey, assuming anybody wants his sorry-ass act. And they're probably going to fire Coach Doug Marrone as well. And they're going to have to find a replacement for Blake Bortles. Jacksonville had its day. AFC title game. Good start to the season. Now completely dysfunctional. You've got to just start over. Push the reset button. Here was Ramsey, very emotional, on the verge of a breakdown, it seemed, after Jacksonville's sixth straight loss.
I've been pretty pissed off, I'm not going to lie to you. I have. I've been battling with my emotions, trying to hold them in. But, you know, I truly believe that I don't have any bad days. I have hard days sometimes, but, you know, God's blessed me too much for me to have a bad day.
As for the Steelers, who have won six straight, they are the AFC's number two seed right now and might sew up that seeding next month with a home win over New England. At this point, the Patriots would join the Houston Texans in hosting wild card weekend games. Yikes. And if you thought the Titans were the team on the rise in that conference, guess again, with Marcus Mariota nursing another injury and defensive coordinator Dean Pease in the hospital. Another old soul you might root for here, Andrew Luck is back. He's finally healthy again behind a Colts line that actually protects him, and a new head coach, Frank Reich, who has installed the scheme to take advantage of Luck. This is a great story. Andrew Luck, finally some good luck for Luck, who has 7 straight games with 3 or more TD passes. 3rd longest in league history. Where the hell did this come from? Were you among those who thought Luck was kaput? I was. You might check him out again in the playoffs. Great comeback story. And as predicted by moi, me, the Bears have returned to genuine respectability with their squashing of the Vikings, meaning Chicago is in control of the NFC North. Everybody talks about the Saints and the Rams, but wouldn't you love to see Khalil Mack and that defense take on those super offenses? Those wondering why Lamar Jackson slipped to the bottom of the first round while Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, and Josh Rosen went in the top 11 may have the last laugh. Jackson, it seems, is no gadget player. The Baltimore Ravens, symbolized for so long by the slow-footed pocket passing of Joe Flacco, went completely rogue Sunday in handing over a two-way offense to the mobile Jackson, who gashed the awful Bengals defense by juking and sprinting for 117 rushing yards while surviving various passing mishaps to keep the Ravens alive in the AFC wildcard race and coach John Harbaugh employed. Jackson will have to improve as a passer to reach the two-way level of a Michael Vick or Russell Wilson, but his arrival is refreshing for a franchise that really needs a new look. Here was Action Jackson.
It was awesome. You know, we came out with a bang. You know, we came in and scored. Second drive, you know, we didn't score. Third drive, we didn't score. So I started getting ticked off. I mean, we got to put points on the board. Our defense keep getting out there. We're not performing well. So, yeah, it was pretty cool for the first drive. I think I stayed up all night last night. You know, I was like, man, we need to play right now. I was ready to play last night. And, you know, 1 o'clock came, I'm like, let's go time.
So what'd you do? What'd you do all night when you stayed up?
Drunk water. Drunk a lot of water. It's better than the preseason game ball. It really counts here, so it was pretty awesome. Chad came up to me like, get the ball. I chased the guy, got me a strip and sack off the referee. Had to play on the defense.
And the Dallas Cowboys, left for dead only 2 weeks ago, suddenly have a possible Thanksgiving feast in front of them. After a last-second win over Atlanta, they now host the Redskins with McCoy replacing Alex Smith, with a chance of vaulting into the lead in the weak NFC East, the Cowboys? Your other Turkey Day games, Lions, Bears, Saints, Falcons, aren't bad either. The Lions stunned the Panthers, proving that Matt Patricia might know what he's doing when he had his players practicing in the snow the other day when they play in a home dome. While the Bears need to keep winning to make the playoffs. And the Saints and Breeze, look, Drew is America's newest ageless darling, and they are a treat no matter who they're playing. Years from now, when reviewing the dynasty of the Golden State Warriors, we will view their current combustibility in one of two ways. Proof that egos and money issues in the 21st century killed off a prolonged championship run, or we'll see it as a mere blip that exhibited how the Warriors could overcome their biggest obstacles themselves by winning a third straight title and fourth in 5 years. Either way, this is a social experiment that feels historic in scope, and when the Draymond Green-Kevin Durant confrontation is followed by a three-game losing sweep in Texas, Coach Steve Kerr realizes his charmed existence is suddenly being challenged like never before in a regular season.
Dream week you've had, at least in the regular season, since you started coaching?
Oh, yeah. But I've had a dream run for, you know, 4.5 years. We've had, you know, such a charmed existence the last four seasons. So, yeah, of course, this is the toughest stretch we've been in. But this is the real NBA, you know. We haven't been in the real NBA the last few years. We've been in this this dream, and so now we're faced with real adversity.
I don't have a crystal ball, but I do wonder if dissension and injuries will decimate the champs this time. Recalling how close they came to disintegrating last May in a Game 7 against Houston, and whether they survive or not, this angle will continue to confront them. In the weeks after the season, will Durant be leaving? And how will his decision affect his legacy and the Warriors' legacy? Durant has spent the last week blaming the media, of course, for the evils of his teammate slash irritant Green, who blitzed Durant with that unforgivable torrent of abuse, repeatedly calling him a bitch, quote unquote, and worse, and challenging Durant to please leave in free agency, all in that huddle and then in the locker room when it was Green who screwed up on the final possession of regulation in that overtime loss to the much-improved Clippers. And while Kerr and Bob Myers finally got around to suspending Green after years of protecting him and coddling him amid his disturbing missteps, it's more probable than not that Durant will leave the Warriors, win or lose, certainly if they lose, and cast his mercenary lot with another team, perhaps, yep, LeBron James and the Lakers. This creates an entirely new storyline this season for the Warriors, who previously had been assumed to be cakewalking to yet another title, and the damage control has not been pretty. Durant almost sounded Trump-like, hypocrisy, Kevin, in lashing out at a reporter.
Kevin, with having another game to play and having some dialogue, how would you characterize how things are with you and Draymond?
Don't ask me about that again.
Then Durant played editor in wondering how long the media questions would continue.
Steve kind of said he thought the vibe was better tonight than in Houston. He feels like the vibe around the team's getting a bit better. He said, I mean, do you agree?
Yeah, he's trying to move forward. I mean, we're going to talk about this the whole year. We just want to play ball. I know that's not all I want to do.
Green then went off in one of his rambling, spinning justifications, never apologizing, appealing the $125,000 one-game fine, and then saying the Warriors would prove everybody wrong and win another title.
You know, with what happened a few nights ago, you know, Kevin and I spoke. We're moving forward. You know, I think there's no secret that I am an emotional player. You know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I play with that same emotion. You know, sometimes it gets the best of me, and, you know, it doesn't work to my favor. I'm going to live with that, you know, because it works in my favor to the good, as my resume speaks and this team resume speaks, more so than it doesn't. And so I'm never going to change who I am. I'm going to approach the game the same way that I always do. And, you know, like I said, we'll continue to move forward. You know, and I've read a lot about how, is this the end of the run, or is it over, or did I ruin it, or did I force Kevin to leave? You know, at the end of the day, as I've said before, whatever Kevin decided to do, whatever Clay decided to do, whatever who decides to do, you know, we had great years together, and I support everybody wholeheartedly, 100%, because as a man, as a human being, you got the right to do what you want to do with your life, and so I'll never question that. But what you must know is nobody in this organization, from a player, you know, not myself, not Kevin, not anybody else, is going to beat us, you know. So if you one of them other 29 teams in this league, you got to beat us. We're not going to beat us. We're going to continue to do what we do.
And Kerr, who finally felt the need with Myers to remind everybody who's boss, spoke of a team that was hurting spiritually and physically, with Steph Curry still out with a groin strain and Green nursing a toe problem. Those injuries led to that jolting sight, that 3-loss sweep in Texas. Curry wasn't supposed to make the trip, but his leadership skills, his psychology skills actually, were needed to mend a broken relationship between Durant and Green, who was then given time off by Kerr. Not toe-related. That sounded almost like an extended suspension. Here was Curry claiming he is proud of his teammates. Proud?
It's been different. It's been tough. Obviously, it sucks not to be able to play. It sucks when you're not with the team when something like that happens. But I think the way we've handled it as a team, the way Draymond's handled it, the way KD's handled it, it's been nothing but professionalism and understanding it's about the team. And conversations that we've all had, whether it's one-on-one, as a team, it's with keeping that in mind that we have the opportunity to do something extremely special this year. There's going to be ups and downs and bumps in the road, whether it's self-inflicted or whether it's from outside. And at the end of the day, nothing should distract us from what our goal is. I think guys have attempted and are going to continue to get to a place where we can continue to move forward and get back to who we are as a team. And obviously, once we get over these injuries, we'll be able to show what we're about as a team and do it together. So I'm extremely proud of the way we've handled this last week, because there's an opportunity really to implode and crumble, but that's not going to happen.
It was Draymond, remember, who texted Durant, pleading him to join the Warriors after Green helped sabotage what would have been title number 2 by clawing LeBron in the man region and landing that one-game suspension in the 2016 finals. Now, for the first time, we see a Golden State future that might actually have an expiration date. If Durant does leave, the chances increase of Green and Klay Thompson maybe sticking around for the long haul. I don't know, maybe not. Don't be surprised if everybody but Curry is expendable and that management pursues Anthony Davis as the new cornerstone. Owner Joe Lacob stayed ahead of the game in landing Durant, and his hunger to keep rolling this league has not subsided, especially with the pressure to fill that new $1 billion plus arena he's building in San Francisco. Kerr has been trying to downplay the turmoil, but after the Texas triple, he couldn't hide his frustration. But make no mistake, this was more than a dust-up last week. This could affect the legacy of Durant, who has the decision to keep collecting titles or to take a harder road elsewhere and quiet all the people who have called him a cupcake, and the legacy of the Warriors, who might not win ever again if Durant leaves and they can't get Davis. Much will depend on the continued response of the ever-volatile Green, who might actually asshole his way out of the franchise. I love using asshole in that context in a sentence. That's perfect for him, right? A Mariotti aside. Draymond says the episode will galvanize the team. Maybe it will. It's the middle of November, but when Durant said he wasn't re-signing for the long term last summer, it created unrest within this team as if he's looking down at the rest of them in some political power play, and that's exactly what it is. It's another example of how impending free agency can poison franchises, how superstars have way too much power in this league before their free agency arrives. I wonder what the late Kurt Flood, he of the reserve clause, he of the lawsuit in the 70s, he of the shortened career, the blackballed career, would think of what's going on in the NBA. They should all thank Kurt Flood every single night in the NBA. And if you're like Draymond and you think the Warriors can win again without Durant, that's what he said in the huddle, well, look around at this new NBA. Bucks, Raptors, Sixers, along with the raging Carmelo-less Rockets, and you tell me that Golden State isn't vulnerable. Not long ago, the Warriors were actually mugging together in a group troll of actor Josh Duhamel, a friend of mine, who had called out Green as less than a man when he laughed at Duhamel's ex-wife, Fergie, during her ill-fated national anthem attempt at the All-Star Game. Very low-class Draymond Green. Loved how Duhamel was defending his ex-wife. Now, Green is turning on Durant. After the Warriors were dancing and making fun of Duhamel, and now here's Green turning on Durant. These guys some of them are jerks. Green's a jerk. He's a prick, okay? I do have faith in Curry and Durant as mature human beings. I have no faith in Draymond Green. Speaking of mercenaries for hire, LeBron became the latest NBA player to go for 50 or more points in the league's freedom of movement / no defense mode, needing 31 shots to score 51 in a rout of his former team, Miami. You have noticed LeBron taking charge offensively in recent games, though the Lakers laid a no-defense egg in Orlando. Right now, I've got to give more love to LA's forgotten team, the Clippers, who do show up every night, and they're very well coached by Doc Rivers, something we can't say about the Lakers every night. Doc has been able to show off his coaching chops with this new group, unlike the Griffin-Paul Jordan years when drama cut off the title dream and pretty much cut off Rivers at the pass. And Jimmy Butler is fitting in nicely with the 76ers. He dazzled a Philly crowd that serenaded him in his home debut. Then he saved the day in Charlotte, overcoming a wild 60-point night by Kemba Walker. That's now five NBA players with 50 or more games so far. By blocking Walker's shot at one end, saving the basketball from going out of bounds, then hitting the game-winning three, Jimmy Butler. The Sixers need more shooters still to win the East, and both Butler and Ben Simmons were destroyed by Walker on the defensive end. But Jimmy is happy now. I'm happy Jimmy is happy. If Jimmy's happy, I'm happy. And then he took a shot at his former mates, the Timberwolves, calling them soft. One cannot be soft and survive Philadelphia. And if Butler does win in Philly, they won't care if he actually still drives a minivan. They will build a statue of him, maybe next to Rocky. And why would any NBA team want any piece of Carmelo Anthony when evidence is unassailable over two seasons that his ball draining no defense act is finished? The Lakers should avoid him despite his friendship with LeBron, because Those kids play sporadic defense as it is, and they don't need his habits. Here was LeBron avoiding the Carmelo question, which only raises suspicions.
Carmelo and Lakers, is it possible?
Huh?
Carmelo and Lakers, thoughts? Is it possible?
I have no idea, to be honest. That's not a question to ask me. Right now, we don't. And we have 15 roster spots, right? We don't even have a roster spot open right now, so that's not a question for myself.
Thank you.
And the Sixers, they're going places, so why would you let Anthony sabotage them? Despite his qualities as a mid-range shooter, the way he brought down the Thunder last season and the Rockets the season before they dumped them last week, I have an idea. Anthony, who has Puerto Rican roots, should take up the advice of Dallas guard J.J. Barea, who wants Melo to join him on Puerto Rico's national team. I like that. That way, we'll see how Anthony has cherry-picked his way to all-time Olympic scoring leadership with USA Basketball, when with a lesser Olympic team, he will struggle. Hang it up, Melo. You can't play ball hog and shoot 15-footers in today's game. You got to play some defense. Your time passed, dude, and you are not a Hall of Famer. To college football, where Ohio State opens as a rare home underdog against Michigan, and its very first time as an underdog, period, in its last 52 games after the Buckeyes barely survived a shootout against Maryland. Emotions will be at a fevered pitch in Columbus, where there's a strong sense that the Urban Meyer era could be ending, with Meyer again suffering health issues on the sideline Saturday. And while defensive stalwart Chase Winovich may be limited Saturday, Michigan still has an abundance of talent on that unit to slow down Dwayne Haskins and steal a victory that would put the Wolverines within a win in the Big Ten title game over a very beatable Northwestern of a college football playoff berth. Jim Harbaugh back. On a weekend when Alabama actually was tied at halftime against the Citadel, before pulling away 50-something, and then a weekend when Clemson started slowly against Duke, Notre Dame threw down a resounding hammer by routing Syracuse at Yankee Stadium. And Notre Dame will have no problem this weekend against USC, which soon will be firing the overmatched Clay Helton, and yet another reset of a program that hasn't gotten it right since Pete Carroll fled the burning building many years ago. And he really needs to look beyond the program's traditional ties to Carroll for the next head coach. Go out of the box. Maybe you'll hear the name Jed Fish, an assistant with the LA Rams, not F-I-S-H, F-I-S-C-H, as a candidate. The top four will not change this week in the CFP rankings, but Ohio State could create chaos by toppling Michigan and opening the door for Georgia and Oklahoma in the debate. But if Michigan wins, I think your Final Four is going to be locked. And remember Les Miles, who won a national title at LSU, crazy Les back in the day? I guess he'd rather scratch his coaching itch than stay retired, agreeing to a deal at Kansas. Oh, good. One of the worst programs in major college football. I have one question for Les, who is 65. Why? I should mention that Les's son, Manny, a walk-on quarterback at North Carolina, threw a Hail Mary touchdown pass for the Tar Heels. I think Les should not be pressing the family luck here and turn down Kansas. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joining the program. Chris, you're an open-minded guy. So I'm going to ask you this seriously. How would Condoleezza Rice fare as an I can't believe I'm asking this, as an NFL head coach?
Now, Jay, you know, there's people that spend their entire lives in football. They work their way up, and they become NFL head coaches, and they're god-awful. Hugh Jackson, the former coach of the Browns, might be somebody you put in that example. Spent his entire life in coaching, and yet can't coach in the NFL. Now, if you want to think outside the box and say, you know what? Maybe that's the reason we use somebody who has never coached before, and that'll actually work. Well, that might be true. But the time it would take for her to probably learn how to be an NFL head coach, and I don't mean from a football standpoint of like, let's run, let's pass, but really the inner workings of how that works, all that's involved in running a team, running all the other coaches, running players, running an offense, running a defense, It's interesting. Now, if you say you bring in two amazing coordinators, and then she's sort of just the figurehead, and many people say Herm Edwards is doing that kind of setup at Arizona State. At least Herm Edwards has been an NFL head coach before with some success. It's just mind-boggling that the Browns have made this a topic. And really, again, instead of promoting the positives, their number one overall pick, the future in Cleveland, this is what ownership does. Great.
Chris, L.A. is a football town today, maybe not tomorrow, but today, with the NFL's game of the year so far taking on a healing tone amid a Hollywood backdrop. I'm picking the Chiefs, but should the Rams win, Chris, will this region suddenly pin its hopes and dreams on this franchise? Or maybe are the Rams still too new here, especially amid the Dodgers' repeat World Series failures and the ups and downs of the Lakers, the latest up being LeBron's 51 spot?
Jay, I do think a loss tonight would be very, very bad for the Rams because, you know, there's so much talk about how that defense is horrible. Marcus Peters not playing well. Everyone hopeful that Aqib Talib will be back after the bye week in week 13, against the Detroit Lions. So I think another piercing to that the defense is bad, the Seahawks put a lot of points, they just barely beat the Packers, and if the Packers didn't run that ball out of the end zone late in the fourth quarter, they would have lost. All these things, you don't want a loss tonight against the other best team in the NFL, because that just says, well, then you're not the best. Tonight, they can kind of sweep that all under the rug, go into the bye week, come out week 13, hopefully with Talib back, and say, hey, you know what, we are the best in the NFL. And I think unlike the Lakers, who have been bad for so long, and now we're seeing hopes, and LeBron's putting up 51, and even though they lost to the Magic on Saturday, it's still hope is in the air, but they've been bad for so long. The Rams were bad. Then they were really good last year, lost in the playoffs first week or second weekend of the playoffs, but first game for the Rams at the Coliseum against the Falcons last January. You don't want people to kind of think, well, maybe you're just not that good anymore. You don't want to put that in the air again, that you're just not that good. That makes people kind of step back from it all. So I think a win is important tonight. Chiefs is a good pick, but I am going to pick the Rams. It's going to be challenging. That defense is going to get run a little bit by Mahomes and the Kansas City offense, but their defense isn't good either. And I do believe that they will step up with the energy, the Coliseum lights, Monday night in L.A. I think Goff, Gurley, and the Rams offense steps up, and it's a shootout, but they will be the last man standing at the end.
And Chris, scream if you'd like. What was your general reaction upon seeing Alex Smith's leg basically snap?
I turned my head because you knew it was bad. And it was bad. And I feel for Alex Smith. Nobody wishes that upon anybody. I don't know about today. A lot of comments from Joe Theismann and everyone jumping in. Hopefully he's not out forever like Theismann was. But that was tough. And tough for the Redskins, who are having a decent season. Tough Sunday for Washington.
Okay, thanks, Chris. Which brings us to quickies. Which are just that quick. The best college football drama was in Houston, where future NFL multi-millionaire Ed Oliver was seen berating his coach and maybe losing a few of those millions. On the sideline, Major Applewhite, love that name, ordered Oliver to remove a team jacket from his shoulders because he was not active in the game. Applewhite has a rule, only active players wear jackets on the sideline. And so Oliver went ballistic. This only will hurt Oliver's draft status when, ironically, Oliver is trying to protect his draft status by sitting out games. Just say goodbye, Ed. You may as well hire your agent right now. You're gone. If we're ever going to become colorblind in this world, we have to stop comments such as those of Detroit Lions cornerback Darius Slay, who said of Carolina's Christian McCaffrey, and I'm quoting, "I never saw a white guy do it like that. He goes out there and he plays on an elite level for the running back. White running backs are known for running folks over. He be out there shaking them and doing all what he needs to do and catch it in the air, so he's special," unquote. Slay thinks that's a compliment somehow. I think it's racism. And something really stinks in England, where two professional dart players accused each other of a unique form of competitive sabotage. That would be farting, with Dutch player Wesley Harms saying he'll need 2 nights to lose the smell from his nose after the alleged blowback of Scotland's Gary Anderson, who claims he has owned up for previous farts in competition and, quote, "swears on my children's lives," unquote, that he did not pass gas this time. Rather, Anderson claims Harms is the actual offender. I don't know what happened here. We're going to have testing for farts. And Anderson, the world's number four ranked dart thrower, advanced with a 10-2 win. The chairman of the dart tournament, Barry Hearn, says it's time to get to the bottom of this. That's our show. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever, ever let anybody mute you in life or fart on you at a darts tournament.